Hello, my name is Colette Dugan, and I would like to share some findings today from a study that's recently completed by myself and Virginia Miller, who's in the audience. And it's on the unmet health care needs of persons with tetraplegia and their primary caregivers, policy implications. The impetus for conducting such a study had to do with some observations that we've all made, and that is that persons with spinal cord injury have a greater need for goods and services than do members of the general population. In fact, they need a wide range of services to maintain their health, to prevent further functional losses, and to integrate into society. A second comment is that persons with tetraplegia have a greater need for goods and services than those with lower level injuries. And by that I mean is that the severity of impairment itself puts increased risk for medical complications over the lifetime. They need more hours of care. They need more costly equipment and medical supplies. They need more costly environmental modifications and so forth. Now, in my estimation, public insurance recipients are perhaps with tetraplegia are perhaps the most vulnerable. They have the greatest need for resources and the fewest resources for purchasing health care and goods and services. They are less likely to have additional insurance, either through their spouses or from their parents. They have fewer financial or material resources to pay out of pocket for other expenses. And to a certain extent, we might say they have less social power to advocate for their needs or to speak up for the services that they do need. So this is the reason why I wanted to concentrate on a very specific segment of the SCI population. Basic needs for publicly insured recipients with tetraplegia, for example, here are some that are listed here that I was concerned about, is what about personal assistance services? What about durable medical equipment? What about medical supplies and medication? What about environmental modifications? They need hospital care, outpatient services. They need physician services. They need physical therapy and occupational therapy. All these are the basic needs. And for this particular presentation, I'm simply going to focus on the first three or so of them. I also wanted to adopt a family perspective on SCI caregiving, et cetera, because we do feel that the health and well-being of the spinal cord injury recipient, care recipient, is in large part dependent upon the health and well-being of the caregiver. And I say this with the notion that SCI care is physically demanding, labor intensive, and long term. And it has been likened to having as much impact on the caregiver as Alzheimer's caregiving. However, in this case, it's not time limited by the disease progression because a lot of our SCI care recipients live for long periods of time. And so this is a very long-term affair for these family members. We also know that chronic stress and negative health outcomes are often the rule for the primary caregiver. And given that, over time, it's possible that the quality and consistency of SCI care may be compromised, thereby necessitating perhaps an institutional alternative for home care. So I wanted to build into the little study of what about the needs of the SCI caregivers in addition to the care recipients. A little bit about the study. This is a pilot study that was funded by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan Foundation, and the study objectives are quite apparent there that they describe the healthcare needs of publicly insured recipients with tetraplegia and their primary caregivers. It's a small study, and we actually interviewed 20 pairs of recipients, that is 40 persons altogether. It was a mixed method qualitative quantitative study. We used in-depth audio taped interviews from the participants. We also had the participants complete survey items measuring, among other things, perceived stress, social support, and quality of life. And qualitative data analysis of the transcripts was facilitated by QSR NUDIS 6. And I don't know whether you know anything about this software, but the NUDIS stands for Non-Numeric Unstructured Data Indexing, Searching, and Theorizing. So I just wanted to let you know that. Quantitative data was examined using standard statistical procedures. I'm not going to mention any of the statistical results at this time. A little bit about the consumers themselves. It's a lot to read here. Basically, I want to mention that as typical of the SCI population, the majority were male. And in our sample, a slight majority were African American and were more likely to be injured by violence, which is typical of the SCI population in Detroit, Michigan. Interestingly, in this study, 45% of the respondents had been injured 11 or more years, so they've had a long history of trying to get care. And the other thing that I wanted to mention is we wanted to try to get pure types and just Medicaid only, but it was almost impossible in the period of time that we had to, so that we did include some that had mixed coverage. And private insurance was generally secondary according to the family, and it came from the employment of the spouse or the parent. Okay, so it was a mixed there. In terms of caregivers, of course, most of them were female, and the only thing as essentially different or not needing to be commented on, that among the primary caregivers, 35% were parents and the remainder were other family members, with the exception of a few who had no family members as primary caregivers. Here were the major unmet needs of care recipients that we identified. Personal assistance services, there were some areas of unmet need. And in all of the following four areas, there was some evidence of unmet need. With respect to who provided care to publicly insured recipients, we asked the recipients and their caregivers, who among you or how many people take care of you on a daily basis and provide at least 10 hours of care per week? And we found it broke down to this, that family caregivers who are unpaid constituted primarily the most number. And that is followed by family members who are paid, followed by independent contractors and agency employees who then constituted, you know, the remaining numbers in the population. What I'd like to say here is that when asked how satisfied they were with the care, the majority of recipients were very satisfied with the services provided by their paid family members. 75% said very satisfied. And for unpaid family members, 69%. With the independent contractors and agency employees, they received more variable ratings with scores ranging from very satisfied to very dissatisfied. And the modal score for the agency employee was somewhat satisfied, and for independent contractors, somewhat dissatisfied with the care that they received. Top seven problems, concerns identified is the revolving door. That means that the good caregivers leave very shortly after because they get a better paying job, and those that don't measure up are often fired, if you want to say it. So there's a constant revolving door and a lot of stress and anxiety because they never know who's going to be coming into their house the next time. Very bad problem concern. Difficulty securing adequate amount of agency home care services. No or inadequate compensation of family caregivers. As you mentioned, some were paid and some were not, but none were paid nearly what they should be paid. Most of our family caregivers report something like 40 to 50 hours per week of care, but they are only paid for a very small portion of that. And reliability issues are a big concern of families who employ agency people who don't show up and don't tell them that they're not going to show up. Inadequate training for home health aides are a standard concern of some of these families who are especially dissatisfied. And of course, petty theft, neglect, and abuse have been reported by these family members. And again, some of these families, patients have been injured as long as 28 to 32 years, so they have a long history of all of these things, so it's not necessarily that. In terms of provisions of durable goods and medical supplies, basically, the majority of SCI consumers and their primary caregivers were at least somewhat satisfied with the services that were provided to them in the last 6 months, because the question was like, in the last 6 months, have you contacted a medical supply place? And 18 or only two respondents didn't have contact. Most of them were somewhat satisfied with the services, but a substantial amount, maybe 30% of the sample, were somewhat or very dissatisfied with services related to durable goods and medical supplies. Okay, top three concerns. Okay, blue pads, gel preparation, gloves, laxatives, lotions, other items. These are not covered by insurance, and for families with limited income, it constituted a hardship, but they were not compensated for that. Insufficient supplies of catheters, bandages, leg bags, ostomy bags, Curlexes, and saline solution. By that means, they always wondered whether they were going to run out by the end of the month, and always was having to be monitoring that particular situation. The major thing seems to be from our families is that a lot of the families report that they are only allowed 4 catheters a month, but some say no, that they get much more than that. But they've been told that, well, if you can give me a documented case of a urinary tract infection that you were hospitalized for, then we can give you more catheters, which sounds like reverse or perverse logic as far as the family members are concerned. They just simply shake their heads. Finally, long wait times to receive new wheelchairs and difficulty obtaining needed repairs on wheelchairs. Wait time is often several months, which limits their quality of life and their mobility. Environmental modifications, I don't have much to say about this because most of our family members had been injured for quite a number of years, and if they did get modifications, they had already been put in place. But from what we can say is that of the 20 care recipients and family members, 12 lived in homes that they or their families owned. And 9 of these 12 report that they do have ramps and porch lifts, and 9 of these report that they have bathroom and shower modifications, and only 4 of these who own their own homes have bedroom modifications. Now, these modifications were not necessarily paid by insurance. A lot of the families did the work themselves, or they had fundraisers to get the support for it. But they did manage, those who were assertive, to get them. There was a substantial minority of SEI care recipients living in rented apartments and homes, and the buildings were basically accessible, but the insides were not modified. Homes with no modification for substantial difficulties accessing their homes. And we have one couple that was a homeless couple, and I won't, there was no home for them to talk about. And that's a horror story in itself. Here's a lady who's been injured 11 years, and she still has her porch that she can't get up. She has no van, and she will probably never get modifications for various reasons. Basic needs of SEI caregivers, this is going to be a quick thing. Adequate provision of goods and services to the care recipient. If we can meet their needs, we certainly will enhance the work environment of primary caregivers, which is the focus of my more recent studies, is taking a look at the work environment. Adequate compensation for services rendered by the primary caregiver. This is a basic need. And the availability of respite services for primary caregivers, sometimes that they don't have the money to pay other people to help them, and health insurance coverage for caregivers. Top 6 caregiver issues, I can just tell them: fatigue, poor compensation, backache, shoulder pain, depression experienced by many of the caregivers, lack of time to take care of their needs, and 5 caregivers have no insurance. Policy implications. Here's some that were recommended by our families, okay? A community registry or hotline that links SEI consumers and families to certified caregivers who seek employment. Greater oversight on the part of home care agencies with respect to criminal background checks and training of personnel, and the restructuring of the home care industry to afford bonuses and benefits to retain a cadre of good workers. Implications, adequate compensation for all primary caregivers. They must be allowed to have some respite care, either an adult daycare or something, as they suggest. But more often, they wish they could have paid vacations if they are receiving compensation, so they could pay somebody else to give them some respite. They don't have that. Formal in-home respite care for short-term needs of family, health insurance coverage for low-income uninsured family members, and finally, case management oversight for all families. Okay, and that's basically my story to tell.
Thank you.